Good evening. Welcome to Universal Energy Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Mary Jo Bull, and I am the host of this weekly podcast. Each week, I share my personal experience of spiritual principles honed over 30 years of study, personalization, and experience to help listeners to reach a different understanding of the meaning of life and our true identity. I've been speaking on the principles of self-actualization and spiritual development for almost two decades because I've seen and I've experienced how life gets better and better with a deeper connection to life, our soul, and ourselves. For those who are listening tonight by phone, if you have a question, you can click 1 on your phone to indicate that you'd like to be connected directly to me in the studio. For those listening via the web, if you have a question, please text me at 703-943-9705. Include your first name and where you're from along with your question. So tonight I want to talk about the power of thought. Several questions come to mind as I'm considering thought. What is a thought, anyway? Why is thought important? Where do thoughts come from? That's a few questions that I've been contemplating myself over the last, especially the last couple of months. And as I was driving home this evening from treating myself to, yes, my guilty pleasure, Chick-fil-A. I like Chick-fil-A. It was kind of a long day today, and I decided, since it was such a beautiful night, to treat myself to my favorite meal. And as I was driving home, I was thinking about what I was going to talk to you about tonight. And I was sort of looking back over what I've kind of been working on over the last couple of months, very specifically and in a very focused way. And as I was coming over one of the beautiful rises on the road to my home, I recalled a story that I had heard many years back. And when I heard this story, it really affected me profoundly because the story, the point that it related to me, seemed impossible. And years later, I actually told a friend of mine about this story that I heard about. And it turns out that the person that I told the story to actually knew somebody. He was actually related to someone who knew the man in the story. So I want to share that story with you now. We all have heard about World War II and the dropping of the atomic bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima by the United States military. You've probably seen some pictures from the after effects immediately after those bombs were dropped. They were memorialized in Life magazine many years ago and painted a very shocking and frightening picture of that world event. And the story that I heard was about a man who was in Hiroshima. It might have been Nagasaki. I apologize. I can't remember that exact detail of the story. But he was in the city very, very close to where the atomic bomb was dropped. And he was, the only adverse effect he suffered was some slight hearing loss, temporary hearing loss from the percussive effect of the bomb being dropped and hitting terra firma. He experienced no radiation burns or effects. He wasn't blinded by the blast. He had basically suffered no effects whatsoever from this bomb drop, from the bomb blast. And he became a bit of a local celebrity, if you could have such things at a time like that, because of the fact that he wasn't affected at all by this event, whereas hundreds of thousands of others who were involved in these circumstances and conditions experienced, death. Many of them were killed, experienced severe radiation poisoning, radiation burns, eventually died from their wounds, certainly within a year or two developed different forms of cancer as a result of the exposure to the radiation. This individual experienced none of that, and he became a bit of an oddity in his community because people wondered, you know, why? You were there with us. You were close by. What's different about you? And so he actually was studied by some of the researchers and scientists in his area. They gave him a full physical workup, and they confirmed that there were no effects to his physical body from this event. And what they determined after talking with him at length was that he was not brought up to believe in vulnerability. He was raised to believe was a child of God, a child of Source. And because of that, he was divinely inspired, divinely protected. Life was beautiful. Life was a gift. Life was something to all enjoy. In modern terms, we might say that his parents never introduced doubt into his mind. Clearly taught him that life is well-being. They taught him there's only one power in the universe, the power of what we call love in its many definitions and disguises. They did not instruct him in the ways of being able to recognize or understand another power, what we would call evil. He only was raised just with doubt. So, when he was in close proximity to something that wasn't with well-being, if that other power was not something no active in his consciousness where thought resides, he didn't have access to anything other than love at any given moment. And therefore, he could not be impacted physically by the effects of this event. So, related to the story, years after I heard it, related to my friend, he got a really look on his face. And I asked him, what's that look for? And he said, my father knew that man, which really blew my socks off. And he confirmed details of the story. Wayne Dyer, the late Wayne Dyer, in one of his presentations, he actually gave I want to say it was 1999, but I'm not 100% sure about that, talked about in his own spiritual quest, he lived on the island of Maui in Hawaii. He talked about that a lot during his presentation. And in one of the, in this presentation with Deepak Chopra, he shared that at a workshop, he met a member of one of the, indigenous tribes people on the island of Maui, who he was introduced to this man who, and he was told he was kahuna. We all heard the expression, right? Oh, he thinks he's quite the big kahuna. But Dr. Dyer was very intrigued, and he said to him in his humorous way, he's like, how do you get to be a kahuna? Do you study kahuna 101, or how do you get to be a kahuna? And this indigenous tribesman said to him, kahunas are raised on knowing and not on doubt. So you can see how programming, and we're all programmed by many of the elements in our lives. Certainly, our greatest programming comes from our immediate caregivers, our church, our school, our teachers, our government, you know, certainly in this day and age, the media, social media, and it makes a tremendous amount of difference how we were taught to see the world in what our, that's, it makes a big difference in how we see our world. Sometimes I think I learned too late in my life as a single mom not to introduce doubt into the mind of my daughter, because it wasn't until I started to get really serious about my decision to create something much better for myself than what I had been programmed to believe in the early part of my life. And so as she got older and I began to recognize, I was a world-class worrier. And I began to recognize how I was programming her to worry. And so over time, I became very vigilant about the things that I would say to her. I would ask myself, is this something that absolutely needs to be said? Am I introducing doubt into her? You know, mothers are famous for wanting to warn their children about you name it. And I became very adept at holding my tongue. And if there was something that I felt she needed to recognize, I would think about it and come up with a way to, without introducing it in a doubtful way. So how we see the world, how we believe life to be, is the foundation for our reality. And while we have the capacity, human beings have the capacity to think, I can sit here quietly and think a specific thought, we also spend most of our day in subconscious thought, in thought that doesn't rise to the level of awareness. We see this when we go on a long drive and we arrive at our destination and recognize we really don't remember much about the drive. We got there just fine, but there are big pieces of time of the drive we don't remember. So who's driving the car? Right? If you're sitting in your car and you're driving the car, but you don't remember big chunks of the drive, Who's driving? The subconscious. And we learned how to drive a car. In the beginning, it was a challenge. There were all these different moving pieces and parts that we had to memorize, had to get used to the feeling of the car, when to take our foot off the brake, and how much pressure to put on the gas pedal. You know, that took some time, but eventually we could now do it, and apparently we do, at least subconsciously, we could do it in our sleep. Recently, I experienced an opportunity to sit down at a piano, and I was asking myself, I wonder if I can remember this piece of music that I used to love to play, and I haven't played the piano since I was probably before I went into school, and that was a long time ago. We had a beautiful rosewood baby grand piano in the house that my father bought for the family when I was 10 years old. And he insisted that my brother, my oldest brother, and I take piano lessons. And I really enjoyed it. And there was this one piece of music. I can't remember the name of it now. The Swan Prince, maybe? Anyway, I sat down at the piano. Here I was some many, many, many decades later. And I put my hand, you know, on the keys. I can remember where you're supposed to, you know, the finger placement. And I just kind of closed my eyes, and I thought, I wonder if I can remember how to play this. And I did my fingers exactly where to go when. Matter of fact, because my circuit crossed, I needed to really focus. And so I closed my eyes, and I was able to play this piece of music that I hadn't. And that come from? To 95% of the care the spot we the day before. So we want some experience millennia ago when these ancient wisdom teachings. You know, pressed copper, thin pounded copper, or some kind of animal skin. What quantum science is proving now, what was written on those materials, is that our thoughts directly impact. And that our body, and by our body I mean our DNA, directly impacts the stuff that our world is made of, the invisible stuff that our world is made of. Given this, our DNA, and our DNA affects and organizes the stuff that our world is made of. So take that in for a minute. Oftentimes we talk about information like this, but we don't really stop and take it in. You are able to organize the photons of light that make up our world, your world, through your thoughts. And if you think about a thought, if you think about something long enough without resistance, or if you think about something with resistance, either way, that is going to manifest in the world. That's how powerful we are. And the reason that we're that powerful is because we are more than our five senses tell us. We're more than these physical, what we call physical bodies. come from the world of spirit. Our true being is from the world of spirit. Everything, including thought, by the way, comes from the spiritual, subtle realm. One of the biggest challenges that I addressed and continue to address, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, so this is part of the deal, was clued the realm, the subtle realm of spirit. The reason I was a world-class worrier most of my life is I was not including those subtle realms in my worldview. As one of my favorite teachers likes to say, I was banging it out in the physical. Started to accept that the whole realms, the spiritual world, is real, is true, is there and here. Things in my world started to shift, and that happened as early as 2 months ago. It was right before Memorial Day, and I woke up around probably 4 or 4:30 in the morning. I really don't know what woke me up. I usually sleep pretty soundly, and I live on a very, very quiet lane. But around 4 or 4:30 in the morning, and for a very brief moment, I opened my eyes and I noted that there was very soft light at the foot of my bed, to the right side of my bed, and back in the right corner of my bedroom. And I just went back to sleep. I just sort of noted it and went back to sleep. When I awakened a few hours later to get up and start my day, but my first thought was, what was that? Because, again, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. What's the first thing we do? We start to look for an explanation, a logical, rational explanation. And so I sat on the edge of my bed and thought about where that light had emanated from. Was there a light source in that part of my room? I have a fairly large bedroom that includes not only my bed and a big dresser with a mirror and a regular chest of drawers, but it also has a little reading area, a little study area. I have an oversized chair that I'm sitting in even now as I'm talking to you, as well as a television set and a television stand and a desk. And of course, side tables, small bookcase up against one of the walls. So it's a fairly large room. And so I was thinking about where did that light source, you know, where did that light emanate from? So I was kind of looking at where all my electronics were. And I have a cable box hooked up to my television set. But I know that that light wasn't on. The quality of that light is much different than the quality of the light that I experienced that morning, early that morning. That light from the cable box, while it's a small light, it's very sharp. And it's, I always remember to turn it off because it's so dark here that when it's on, it'll keep me awake or wake me up at night. So I always turn it off. But again, quality of it, very different than what I experienced. And that cable box is on the other side of the room. I have a laptop sitting on a small bookshelf that I have sitting here next to my chair. that holds my MacBook laptop when I'm not using it, but there's no light source around the edges of my MacBook. So it couldn't have come from there. Of course, I also have a floor lamp beside me, and of course that wasn't on. So I couldn't come up with a rational soft glow in the corner of my bedroom. And so I had a conversation. Actually, I texted my teacher, David, about it the next day, and I said, I think I may have had a being of light in my room last night. And he texted me back, and he said, you think? And so we had a conversation the weekend about whether or not I did or I didn't, but why was I questioning it? Why was I hesitating to just accept it, that there was a being of light in my room? Why was I making that into a big deal? And it kind of got me on that path of, what else am I not accepting that could benefit me, that could comfort me, provide me with encouragement, that could provide me with information and help? What else am I not considering? And one of the things that I think I've probably scoffed at, to be quite frank, I probably have scoffed at the idea of spirit guides over my lifetime. But then I started to think about that, and I thought, you know, what if these things are real? What if they're really there and they're available to me, and I'm not availing myself of a very profound and powerful tool that could help me to advance my life? What if they're there and I'm just not tapping into them? Because that is the nature of the spirit realm. It is there, it is present, it is there to help us grow and thrive. But we must take the first step. We have to take the first step. We have to say, I want your help. And if you can help me, I will be grateful for that. There's a lot. There is always a lot on our path. But we have to make the first move. So what are the things that I am not giving credence to that maybe if I try it out, I might actually benefit from it? So over that weekend, I was kind of thinking about this some more. To meditate every morning. And one morning in meditation, and for me, meditation is just, I just sit in the absolute quiet. I close my eyes, I rest my hands on my knees, and I just breathe. And I just follow my breath. Or I find something of the innocuous, quiet, monotone sound to just focus my attention on. Because the mind need something to focus on, but I don't want to think. I want to think deliberately. I want to put myself in a place where my mind is, your mind is never empty, but where it's quiet. Because I know from personal experience that when I do that, I will receive thoughts that I, myself, my would not have produced. Has that ever happened to you? Where all of a sudden that this thought occurs to you and you think, where did that come from? We're going to talk about that more in just a minute. So I was sitting in meditation. It was very quiet. And I sort of had, and I will ask a question. Oftentimes I'll just put a question out there. And sometimes the answer will come within my meditation session. And sometimes it'll come within a day or two, always within 3 days. I will get my answer. So I was sitting and I was asking about what's the name of my spirit guide? And immediately I got this name. And it wasn't like George or Pete. It wasn't like what you might call a normal name. The name that flashed into my mind was Bashar, Bashar. And I knew enough not to allow my rational mind to start asking questions. I just accepted the answer that I got. My spirit guide's name is Bashar. And then I was aware that, see, in my mind's eye, that there was more than one, that there were three. And I could see them, quote unquote, kind of like shadows. And they look like monks, which makes sense to me personally because I have a powerful connection to Catholicism. And I believe I've had many lifetimes within that religious body. And so it would make sense to me that if I do have these guides, that that's how they would show up in a form that would be familiar and comforting to me. So I thought, okay, I have three. One of them is named Bashar. Okay, you know, I can deal with that. Fast forward 10 days, and I was on social media. I was bored one afternoon, and I thought I'd just go on and kind of see what everybody was up to. And as I'm scrolling through my social media Facebook page, I come across this person who is talking about this spirit guide named Bashar. I opened it up. It was a YouTube video, and it's this man who channels, if you will, this being who calls itself themselves Bashar. So again, I've learned not to question. I've learned not to allow my rational mind to sort of overpower or overrule. I've just learned to say, huh, and kind of leave it alone. Because my other option is to let my ego get involved. And suddenly my own personal, individual path to self-actualization now becomes a fascination with this strange occurrence, which takes me right off of my path. And I don't want my ego to hijack my soul. So I just made a note of it because, like, isn't this interesting? I started asking these questions, and now I'm receiving. Clearly, I am in a receiving mode because I'm receiving information, confirmation, encouragement, not necessarily to believe in Bashar, though, hey, if he's here and he can help me out, I'm all over it. But to more fully inform my desire to be able to integrate into my belief system that I am a spiritual being having a human experience, that I am source energy that has extended itself, a piece of itself here into this material world, but that the greater part of me is spirit and remains in the non-physical and is always accessible to me through the faculty of thought. So it's a process. Some things are accepted very easily and immediately. Sometimes it takes a little bit more time. It's all about the journey. It's not about the destination. Because ultimately, there is no destination. This world, this material world, spiritual teachings, wisdom teachings, gospels, scripture, Logion versus all of these wisdom teachings tell us this world, this material world, is a world of illusion. it recently came to me in meditation. One of my favorite scriptures is the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And I always, that's kind of my, was my go-to scripture when I was feeling resistance to the well-being that is naturally flowing through me all the time. I was feeling, when I'm feeling resistance to that well-being because I'm thinking something that's not in harmony with the fact that I am source energy here in this material world. Sorry, I accidentally hit my laptop key. So that's one of my favorite go-to scriptures. But it recently came to me that, I'm going to see if I can pull it up here. I have my Bible open. It recently came to me that I would read that in a time of trouble. And so that part of the scripture, or part of the 23rd Psalm that talks about walking through the valley of the shadow of death, for me, that represented the troubled time that I was having at the moment and the situation I was dealing with. But it came to me in meditation one day that that scripture is talking about the world of illusion. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, even though I walk through this field of illusion, through the world of illusion, I will fear no evil because I know there's only one power. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Not only is God with us, God is us. God dwells within me as me. That made me look at that scripture in a whole new light. In a whole new light. So we know that our thoughts are more than what we've ever been taught to believe that they are. And that we can open ourselves up to receive guidance through thought, through the faculty of thought, we can open ourselves up to receive that guidance and that encouragement. One of the ways that I became very aware that we receive thoughts from source is through, actually, no, here, the Gospel of Thomas. Is through one of the Logion's verses in the Gospel of Thomas. If you're not familiar with the Gospel of Thomas, it is a Gnostic gospel that was part of the Dead Sea Scrolls, and it is one of the I've read several of the Dead Sea Scroll Gospels. There's the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. There is the Infancy of Jesus 1 and 2, the Infancy of Mary. There are all these Gnostic Gospels, but the one that I resonate with most is the Gospel of Thomas. And in the 13th verse, and much of the Gospel of Thomas, much of the verses, the scriptures that are in this gospel are also in the four canonized gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Exclude Thomas from the canonized Bible. No one really knows because the people who made those decisions are long gone. But I suspect that the reason why it was left out was to be very esoteric, and those who were putting the Bible, the books of the Bible, together at the time understood that the level of mentality and education of the people at that time, we're talking, 250 years after Jesus was crucified, the people of that time, their thinking was not very sophisticated. And that many of the people who, the clergy, who were involved with sifting, sorting through all of these different wisdom writings from, you know, hundreds of years ago, those folks, many of them looked at different pieces and said, you know, we don't even understand this. And if we don't understand it, they're not going to understand it. And so they were trying, I think they're trying to put together a volume that could speak to the greater audience, to a wider audience. But clearly, the time for the text of the Gospel of Thomas has come, because those Gospels were found. You know, they had been hidden away, and they were found, and here they are. So this verse, the 13th verse in the Gospel of Thomas, and it says, Yeshua, which is another name for Jesus, Yeshua said to his disciples, "What am I like for you? To what would you compare me?" Peter, who, you know, was a wicked brown noser, said, "You are like a righteous angel." Matthew, who was the tax collector, said, "You are like a wise philosopher." Thomas said, "Master, my mouth could never utter what you are like." Yeshua then says to him, "I am no longer your master, because you have drunk and become drunken from the same bubbling source from which I spring." The reason that Jesus responded to Thomas in that way is because Thomas's response did not come from this world. There was something in Thomas's consciousness that recognized that when you, how do I put this? As you see these principles and you integrate them into your life, life responds back to you and starts showing up for you in a different way than what you experienced before. And you come to this understanding that what you're experiencing, you cannot put into words, which is why it can be very challenging in your relationships, because people, especially people who are close to you, will say, "Something is different about you. What's going on?" And it really is John who said the peace passes all understanding. It's really very difficult to put it into words, because what you're feeling is a feeling. And feelings, especially the English language, is very limited in the words to offer of that experience. So when Thomas responded that way to Jesus, Jesus recognized that Thomas was in that place, that Thomas's consciousness was such that he was receiving thoughts directly from source. And when you do that, what Jesus said here is you become just like Jesus. Because Jesus basically says, "I'm not your teacher anymore. You're just like me now." So there, when I read that verse and meditated on it, I asked myself the question, has that ever happened to me? Have I received thoughts that I know I didn't come up with? I being my little self, my little I. And almost immediately, I started to be reminded of three thoughts specifically that I know didn't come from me. But at the time, I didn't know about that verse. I didn't have that understanding. But at the time that I received them, I apparently was far enough along in my personal quest that I did not discard them. My response to these thoughts that I received was, "Wow, that would be cool," or, "Yeah, I can get behind that." And then I just kind of moved on, but I didn't forget them. And then over the last 2 months, those thoughts, I've been reminded of those thoughts as well. And that it was very coincidental to something that I've been working on for a while now. So when I put two and two together, if you want to characterize it that, when I sort of put those thoughts together, I thought to myself, okay, so these thoughts that I received, are these things I want to experience? And the answer was absolutely. And then, as we are wont to do, the logical, rational mind gets involved, and we start to talk ourselves out of it, or we say, oh, you know, that's kind of crazy, or whatever. But here's the thing. Once you received it, it doesn't go away. It kind of sort of hangs around you until you're ready to actualize. And that's where the soul comes in. That's where the conversation about soul comes in. What I've come to understand in the last 2 months especially is a new understanding of soul. I have always had an understanding that my soul is within me, that I carry it around within me, in my heart. And what I've come to recognize, I read this in an esoteric volume that I've been studying. And what was written in this volume was that we have our life inside our souls. And I read that line and it sort of brought me up a little short. And I contemplated for a minute and suddenly I just had this feeling of, oh yeah, that's true. That's right. And it shifted my perspective. It suddenly, this sense of unworthiness that I didn't know I was still carrying, it dissipated. Because I think what happens is when we make the decision that we want to create something for ourselves, we're excited about it. But then again, the sort of rational, the rational thought comes in, that sense of unworthiness, or that sense that it's going to be a struggle, we're going to have to strive. What if we can't? What if we can't? But there's also, what if there are elements of it that are outside of my control and I can't do anything about that? But when I took the perspective, adjusted my belief that I am living my life inside my soul, I began to realize, to recognize that I am here, this physical body that I know is me, is here to, as a key and integral part of my soul, realizing its desire for a lifetime. Whatever that might be, I have an idea actually what that is. And my job is to allow it. That's all I have to do. If this is something that my soul wants, and the soul wants, because the soul is first, so is God, dreaming or thinking about something over a long period of time. Maybe you had a dream of something that you want to do, or someone you want to be, or someplace you want to go. You kind of had this dream for yourself. What I've come to understand is that dream is actually your soul's desire. And all you have to do is get out of the way and learn how to allow. Just learn how to allow. Learn how to be in the allowing state. Learn how to recognize when you're not in the allowing state, where feelings come in. And we've talked about feelings. I did a whole podcast about feelings are indicators, not confirmation. And if that's something that you would like to listen to or revisit, I would urge you to go to my website, logospraxis.com, and click on the podcast tab, and you'll be taken to the podcast space, and scroll down a little bit and look for the Lotus Praxis icon, and underneath it, it will say feelings are indicators, not confirmation. So job is to allow fire to emerge into this physical world. You know, many of us brought up in spiritual traditions that taught us that we are less than. Basically, life can be gone through, and our reward will be in the afterlife. That we are inconsequential. Even though there is purpose to life, life is not random, life is purposeful. We're here because God put us here, quote unquote. We're told that we are unworthy, that we can strive, but we'll never get there, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, there's a wonderful saying, I think it came out of Court, God can only do for me what he can do through me. God needs us as much as we need God. Us here in this manifest material world, nothing can manifest. Why God projected himself into this material world to be the creator and create these experiences. Things went off the rails. They go off the rails. It's actually very, it's intentional part of the experience. But when we get here, we forget. We eventually learn to, we to believe that we are separate and are from God and our and that consciousness of separation. If we don't have someone to help us to correct that, like the parents of this man who never introduced doubt into his thoughts, into his consciousness, if we don't have somebody to correct that, we're going to develop that idea of separation. And most of us, that's what's happening. We live the first, 40 years of our life learning something, and we spend the rest of our life unlearning it and trying to learn something new. So I hope that you food thought. There's that word again. Thought. Our time for this is up. I want to thank you for your time and attention. Again, I hope you did hear something that caught your attention and that you'll give this some attention and thought over the coming week or weeks. I love to connect with folks who are hearing this information or who are wanting to know more, especially if I can help to provide more context or content about the information offered in this and podcast. I encourage listeners to reach out to me again through my website at logospractice.com. You can click on the schedule a consult tab and send me an email, kind of tell me what it is that you're looking at. I don't charge fees for my time. It's my honor. And honestly, it is my passion to give my time and attention to fellow seekers, because that's what you are. If you're listening to podcasts, you're a seeker. You're looking for this information, just like I am. The only difference maybe between you and I is that I may be a little farther along the path. Maybe I have integrated and personalized this wisdom a little more deeply. I do have a very deep inner drive to learn and know more. And I'm going to share one last Gospel of Thomas verse before we end tonight's call, because it really kind of sums this all up, me and this effort. So second says, Jesus says, whoever searches must continue to search until they find. That when they find, as I am doing, they will be disturbed. Disturbed means interrupting a pattern. In this case, interrupting a pattern of thought. Interrupting old patterns of thought of lack and separation and limitation so that you can allow for patterns of thought of abundance and unity with the truth of who you are. When they find, they will be disturbed, and that's true. It does interrupt your patterns of thought and belief. And being disturbed, they will marvel, read, they will experience miracles, and I know this because I have. And being disturbed, they will marvel, they will reign over. When you know who you are and you adjust your thoughts and your beliefs accordingly, you will manifest things in your life that at one time you told yourself that it was a pipe dream. At one time you told yourself, this isn't attainable. Again, thank you again for joining me here tonight here on Universal Energy Radio. You can find us here on course, but also on iTunes. Go to iTunes and search on Universal Energy Radio and like us there. I know Anna would really appreciate that. Thanks again for listening. Have a terrific week. And I hope to see you back here next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Thank you and good night.